You're listening to a podcast of Vancouver Canucks hockey on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. This is the Kintech Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show.
To the point for Hughes, left side for Jordy Benn, trying to get it towards the crease. He does. There's okay. Pettersson on a backhander, and he scores! And they'll win a draw and quickly set things up. Darnell Nurse gives off for Nugent Hopkins. Centering feed for McDavid, who scores! Well, it only took 8 seconds for the Oilers to cash in with the man advantage.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Adam Larson with a shot. Get a body in front, but it's in. And Tyler Ennis, Oilers, have scored 4 unanswered.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Seth D.R. Shaw with Brendan Batchelor. Going to welcome in Corey Hirsch into the conversation. Our feedback channels are open, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. An embarrassing performance tonight from the Canucks. They played well to begin the game, took a 3-0 lead, and then it all cratered, and they lost 4-3. And Batch, before we bring Hirsch into the conversation here, you know, we talked so much about the process the past 7 games leading into this one, the 8th game, and they played well enough, and perhaps they deserved better on certain nights. You had a 3-0 lead. You coughed it up, and this was a game the Canucks had to have, and they absolutely cratered with the lead. That is inexcusable. But before we bring Batch into this, Hirschy, what's your take on this? I know you mentioned at the end that, you know, they got to rally around something in that room. It's getting really difficult to believe that this team can even do anything at this point, right? I mean, you had a 2-goal lead last game against Winnipeg. They coughed that up. Winnipeg goes up, they tie it up, and they go to overtime, and they lose. Tonight you have a 3-goal lead, and that evaporates. I mean, there is really no silver lining you can take from a game like this.
Yeah, man, that's, you know, when you're not confident, like, that's the stuff that happens, right? When you're winning games, you win some of those like that. When you're not, the other teams, like, you got McDavid and Draisaitl just kind of spinning around, and they weren't even that good tonight, right? I mean, we looked at that, it was Cahoon that ended up hurting the Canucks, but it's sad. They're not good enough. I mean, flat out, like, let's call it what it is. And they're still, you know, and it's not really, I think last year we got teased a little bit, which is fine. That's great. It was awesome. But the core of this group is still young, right? Like, you see the Oilers right now. Connor McDavid missed the playoffs like 3 times in a row. And now you see this Oilers team really starting to put it together, right? So that's what it is. We got to look at it for what it is. And they're still a developing young team that, the core group is that, I mean, you got guys like Quinn Hughes is going up against McDavid, and he's still, you know, is only a second year pro. So just call it for what it is. They're not good enough. They're still young. They're still going to be a great team. Probably just not going to happen this year.
Yeah, I mean, Hirschy, I mean, this is a thing, and I understand. You know, you can look big picture and all that sort of stuff, and we'll see ultimately what happens beyond this season. But it's just one of those things that maybe they're not good enough, and maybe that is the reality of this season. But even if you're not a good hockey team, coughing up a 3-goal lead, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there are certain things. You're right. I mean, this is the thing. You can lose hockey games. Sometimes things go against you. This season, though, it's been a lot of embarrassing losses.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not. I can't defend, you know, that it hasn't been. It's it started out bad, and it's just kind of snowballed since then. They haven't been good enough. And you know, what do you? I can't sugarcoat it. And you've got some really good players. They're going to be good players still, and it's going to be a little bit. We got teased a little bit last year. Some of the decisions that were made to not sign guys or to let guys go or some other stuff. We don't know what happened in those war rooms, but just, you know, they're hurting the team right now. And you know, it's tough to watch night after night. a team in a control of the lead and then just kind of end up losing the hockey. And they you know, they've gotten a couple of points in the last little bit just basically by getting goals in the last couple minutes too, right? So it's been tough. I know it's tough in the locker room. Those guys are feeling it.
I'm sure they are, and it's not an easy position to be in for those players. And, you know, the conversation around the playoffs had been, you know, hey, maybe if they win enough games, maybe this happens, maybe that happens. It's just at this point about being respectable on some nights. Yeah. And there are too many nights where this team is lost. And listen, this isn't about how fans feel at the end of the day in terms of, you know, losses or whatever, but it's a bad situation when fans of the team, more often than not this season, with losses, are fuming and saying, this is embarrassing, I can't handle this. Yeah. And, you know, we had the 9 out of 16 games where they lost by 5 or more goals to begin the season, which is something that hasn't happened since the 93-94 Ottawa Senators, year 2 since coming back to the National Hockey League. And then you're seeing games like this, back-to-back nights, where you have multiple, not back-to-back nights, but two games in a row here, where you had a multi-goal lead that evaporates, and tonight you got nothing out of it. It's hard to be a fan and get excited about a team when things like that keep happening.
Yeah, it's hard for us to watch that. I mean, it's hard to see, you know, past this game, but I'm still trying to look a couple years ahead, and everybody wants it now, and I'd like to see this team do it now too. But fact of the matter is there's still a lot of changes to be made. You know, and there's players that are on, you know, deals that they signed 2-3 years ago that are now 2-3 years older. And that's, you know, that's what hurts too. So you look at what the Oilers have done. They were a slow, not a very quick team at all. And you see the pace that they've played with tonight. That's completely different than what I've seen before from them. So yeah. That's where the Canucks have to get to. You got to play. Colorado set that tempo. They set that tone where you got to be quick and you got to be fast. And the Canucks right now are not a fast enough team. You know, you look at the third and fourth lines, they're not quick enough.
They're absolutely not quick enough. But the thing here is it's about self-inflicted wounds and problems and showing fragility yet again. I mean, you have a 3-0 lead, it goes 3-1, it goes 3-2, and you saw them start teetering in that third period. I mean, they really cannot handle adversity right now all that well. They've had moments where they have come back, but even a night like this, they scored the opening goal and still lost that game. This fragility is something they have to overcome as a group, but it gets harder and harder to do that when you have losses like this, Rishi.
Yeah, and well, and you know what, even sad, at the end of the second period, I could almost feel it. Like you could feel. I don't know if you could or see it or sense it, but the Oilers were coming on at the end of the period. In the second period, the Canucks just kind of hang on. Like Demko made some great saves. Connor McDavid hit a post, and then, you know, they got that one early in the third, and that was kind of like then you knew it was kind of a matter of time. Just the confidence level crumbles, and I think when that happens, you know, you have to start. Yeah, you just got to make you can't control wins and losses as an individual. Like, I can't go out there and control whether, you know, when I played, I was only one player on a team. You're only one player. But what you can do is make it hard for the guy across from you, right? Make it hard on him to play against you. If he's going to beat you, make them earn it. And it seemed like they just kind of handed it to them, right? They didn't have much of a pushback. They didn't get that extra goal that they needed. And you gotta make it hard on the other team and the other players across from you every night.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm seeing a lot of reaction here to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Stevie B says, we have one of the poorest forechecks in the league. It's just painful. Nav from Poco, we aren't good enough, but the effort hasn't been there through 60 minutes. I wouldn't count on the Canucks making the postseason push. And postseason, it's, you know, it's a Jim Mora clip again.
We're talking postseason.
You got to win a hockey game. And Travis himself said that on Saturday. He was asked about it, about playoffs. He said, playoffs? I mean, right now, all we're trying to do is win a hockey game, and they haven't won a hockey game since.
Yeah.
They lost in overtime to the Jets. They had a 3-goal lead tonight. They lose 4-3 in regulation. You get nothing out of it. I mean, it's just one of these back-breaking losses. And, you know, fans are either livid or they're over it. And by being over, a number of texts have come in, and they're saying, like Sam, for instance, saying, I'm done. I'm not watching any more hockey this season. I'm done watching this team. I mean, it's getting to that apathetic point now when they play like this.
Yeah, and I can understand that where they're like that, but you know, like I said, they're still a young team. Like this team is still, you've still got Quinn Hughes, you've still got Pettersson Besser, you've still got Horvat. You know, there's a good core young group that 2 years from now are going to be like the Oilers, that are going to be where, you know, Dreisaitl and McDavid and Matt, I mean, those guys are, you know, world class, but you know, like they're still, but it's, we want it now, and we want to see it now, but these guys are still young. We got to be patient with them. We got to watch them, and we got to, you know, and make it, you know, make them be wanted here in Vancouver, and know that, you know, we're cheering them on, and that they're going to be a good team. It's just they're young right now.
Yeah, the top end guys are young, and those guys, you know, are going to build over time. But as far as faith in the plan moving forward, I mean, it's a lot of things have to go right. It goes beyond just having a core of players that fans do believe in. Let's welcome in Brendan Batchelor into the conversation. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650, or toll free 1-888-275-0650. We got you on now, Batch. You're good to go?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you have me?
I got you now. We can hear you. So what are your thoughts kind of seeing this unfold the way it did, Canucks blowing a 3-goal lead, losing 4-3 in regulation?
Yeah, it's tough. This was a game where they needed to make sure that didn't happen. And, you know, I said it with walks after two periods that, you know, they had to find a way to win this game and win it in regulation. And instead, they found a way to lose again. And I know Travis Green on the pregame show disputed that when I put it to him that way. But I think that's the only way you can describe this game tonight, and certainly credit the Oilers for their push in the third period, but the Canucks were not good enough in the third period, as they have been too often lately, and as a result they don't have any points to show for it.
And that's the thing, right? Not having anything to show for it is the big problem. And Hershey, before we let you go, final question I got here for you. You know, we keep talking about maybe give a goalie a bit of a run and let them do it. And, you know, you and I talked about, hey, it's time to hand it over to Thatcher Demko from now on. What did you make of his performance tonight? And do you even go back to him next game?
Yeah, I mean, the one goal I didn't like, the first one, but it was off the post and off his back. What are you going to do? Right? I mean, I watched, like, what was he supposed to do on the Connor McDavid goal or the Ennis goal, right? I mean, I would start looking at it this year now. I'm almost to the point where I know that they're still trying to think about playoffs and making the playoffs and all that, but I would start just playing guys and giving them as much ice time as I can, your young guys, and just look at it as keep developing guys, right? So every time Thatcher Demko sits on the bench, he doesn't get any better. He sits on the bench, right? So you gotta keep playing him. And he's been the better of the two goalies consistently, I would think. You know, Holtby's had some good games, but he's been very inconsistent. So, you know, I think it's time to just start playing Demko and just give him those games. Like I said, every time he sits on the bench, he doesn't get any better.
Hershey, you always get better, and we look forward to chatting with you on Thursday when the Canucks play the Edmonton Oilers again on the pregame show, and you have the call with Joey Kenward as well.
I'll be back on Thursday.
Oh, Batch is back. Wow, Batch was quick on that, too. He's like, no. I am back on Thursday.
I've had enough sitting at home. I'm ready to go. I'm coming out of the bullpen. Let's go.
Love it.
All right, fantastic stuff. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Canucks lose 4-3 in regulation, blowing a 3-0 lead in the first period to, well, catch another L on the season. Let's go to the phone boards. We have Jason in Surrey on the line. Jason, thanks for calling in, man. What you got?
Yeah, hey, guys.
I think we just lost Jason. So try to get back on the line there, Jason. Let's go to Jake in Langley. Jake, thanks for calling in, man. What you got?
Hey, man, thanks. That last call actually summed up pretty much the third period for the Canucks there. But honestly, guys, like, I have a couple things to say. So the first thing is I think I'm just kind of slowly coming to the realization that this team is just not very good. Like, it's just not a good hockey team. It's not built properly whatsoever. There's way too many mistakes throughout the year that kind of, you know, emphasized even more mistakes in the offseason, which just created a very unbalanced and poor hockey team, wasting Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes' ELC. So that's my first comment. My second comment basically is I think the Vancouver Canucks now have to transition and be a little bit more proactive. The trade deadline is not going to be like any other trade deadline this year because of the whole COVID restrictions when it comes to flying across the country and stuff like that. I think the trade deadline should be basically the 2 weeks before that. They need to start thinking about what players they want to keep, what players they don't want to keep, and, you know, potentially thinking about working some, you know, draft pick type deals and getting some trades done for the future here, because this season, like, you guys look at the standings. It's not even close. Like, it's not that we're not in the playoff conversation. It's like we're in the conversation of a bottom five team in the entire National Hockey League. So that's all I got to say, guys. Thanks for the great show. I appreciate it. Cheers.
Thanks for the phone call, Jake. I mean, you know, at this point, they're really not a good hockey team.
No,
they're not.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're not playing like a good hockey team. Yeah, the process, which we've talked about, people are sick and tired of hearing about it. Yeah, I mean, we can sit here and talk about, yeah, you've done this over the past 7-8 games, and this has been good. But now, over the past 8 games, they have 6 points to show for it. And in 2 of those games, they've blown multi-goal leads. 2-goal lead the other night, and a 3-goal lead tonight. That's what bad hockey teams do, Batch.
Yeah, no, if you're a good hockey team, you don't lose the game tonight, right? Like, you just don't. So it's tough, right? Because the expectations were so high, and there was so much optimism coming off the bubble, but clearly something is not right with this team. And we've talked a lot about how the roster is constructed, that the Canucks need their top guys to be game changers almost every night to have success, because they're not going to get a lot of offense from the bottom six. Although they have got a lot of offense from the blue line this year, which has been one of the few silver linings in some of their recent struggles. But, you know, again, tonight they get out to that lead, and that's not a lead that any team in the National Hockey League should be blowing, let alone blowing multi-goal leads multiple times in a short span like Vancouver has. So, you know, the Ottawa Senators found a way to win again tonight. And the scary part about this is you look at the standings in the North Division now, and I'm more interested in the conversation about the Ottawa Senators only being 5 points back of the Vancouver Canucks, as opposed to the Vancouver Canucks only being 4 points back of a playoff spot. Because you look at both Vancouver and Ottawa, they're both sub 400 teams at this point. And that, at this point, like, we're almost at the halfway mark of the season, Sat. We're 5 games away from the halfway mark. This is what the Canucks will be this season. Even if they find a way to get on a run in the second half of the year, it's almost certainly going to be too little too late.
That's the thing. And I see a lot of people texting in saying, I'm beyond done, guys, beyond done. And it's like, I'm tired of getting excited about this team, figuring it out, and then they're losing games. I mean, it's text after text to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, with the same type of emotion. Tracy says, the best plan is to play Demko, get him the experience he needs, win or lose, expose Holtby to the expansion draft. And that's kind of where you're at. I think at this point right now, all you can really do is build towards the future and try to build towards next year and, you know, give Demko as many games as possible, try to build those habits up and have something to lean on for next year. But it's complicated because you got a head coach who's in the final year of his contract, and he's going to still be trying to do everything he can to win every single hockey game because he has to at this point. And that's the frustration here, too, about if you have a long-term plan about what you're trying to accomplish here for next season, you're trying to say, build up Demko, build up McEwen, maybe get Michaelis in the lineup at some point, some of these young defensemen too, maybe Rathbone at some point, you're building towards next year. You know, is that something the team is going to be looking to do and feel comfortable about as a coaching staff when they're not quite sure where they're going to be next season? So that's my worry about looking to next year already. I'm not sure that's something that will happen. It's a reasonable point for you to make as a fan, but I would guess, especially a coaching staff that's every single one of them in the final years of their contracts, all they're looking to do is win every single game they can at this point, Batch.
Yeah, certainly. And that's the tough situation that the Canucks have put themselves in by not extending this coaching staff. And, you know, many people out there will say it's a good thing they didn't extend them because if you don't want them back or you think Travis Green is part of the problem. But the fact of the matter is it does put them in this lame duck situation where, yeah, you know, many people would say, okay, trade some of the veterans, get assets, play the young kids. But you know, who in their right mind, if they're in Travis Green's position, would not ice the lineup that they think gives them the best chance to win every night, right? He's got to look out for himself. And if he's not going to be the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks beyond this season, he's going to want to find work somewhere else. So as much as we heard Francesco Aquilini come out and give a vote of confidence to Jim Benning and Travis Green, it's becoming more and more apparent that, in my opinion, ownership needs to make a decision one way or the other. Because, you know, riding the middle here is not just going to have an impact on this season, it's going to have an impact for years to come.
Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Paul in Coquitlam, who's on the line. Paul, thanks for calling in. What you got for us tonight, pal?
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. So, I'm like everybody else. I'm, you know, ticked off at what I'm seeing this season. And, I mean, I keep hearing about how this is a good young team and is still young and, you know, we just need to give it some time, et cetera, but, I mean, yeah, we've got a few good players. Every team in the league has a few good players, but you look at sort of beyond Pettersson, Hughes, Besser, you look at pretty much everybody else. You've got Roussel, Holtby, Virtanen, Eriksson, Edler, Schmidt, Beagle, Gaudette, Ben. I mean, basically, Jim Benning has surrounded a handful of good players with guys that are, like, not very good. And, you know, I think that's the problem. I mean, you need 20 guys or, you know, 15 or 18 guys or whatever to make a good hockey team. And we've got 3, 4, maybe 5 really good players legitimately. They've got great careers ahead of them. The rest of these guys are, I mean, reminds me of the Canucks in the mid-80s. I mean, they're just a bunch of plumbers that, you know, can't do anything. So, I don't know. I think Jim Benning, I've got a lot of problems with him. I don't think he should be the general manager going forward.
Thanks for the phone call. And we'll see what happens at the end of the season, right? Like, we saw Francesco Aquilini go on Twitter, give the coaching staff, give the management team a vote of confidence on Twitter, and they want to wait till the end of the season to figure this stuff out. If you want to see change, perhaps it happens in the offseason. It seems inevitable. Something's going to give here. You have the coaching staff in the final years of their deals, and you're seeing a lot of texts come in about Jim Benning to our text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, I see a lot of people texting in, too, and, you know, saying stuff like, well, this is a 56-game season, and the Canucks are never going to be winning the Cup this year. Hey, that's all fine and good. You can make that case, but the way they're playing now, this is not acceptable. And whether you're calling for jobs or not, and whether that's something you want to go after, the reality is this is a team that is underachieving even from whatever the standard was. Even if they're a team that you thought should not be making the playoffs or a non-playoff team, this isn't the way you expected the season to go. You didn't expect them to lose this way. You didn't expect them to look as, you know, as disinterested at times as they have. And tonight was a bit different than earlier in the season when they looked like they didn't care at all. They clearly do care, at least to some degree. But when you're coughing up a 3-goal lead the way they did tonight, and you had a 2-goal lead which evaporated the other night, it's just, I mean, this is what bad hockey teams do, Batch.
No, absolutely. And you know, to clarify what I was saying before, I'm not calling for people's jobs. We'll get into that in a bit, though, as we go to Travis Green right now at the podium.
All right, we're back now with Canucks head coach Travis Green. We'll take our first question here from Brendan Batchelor.
Hey, Travis, how disappointing was it to have the game go the way it did when you had an early lead again here tonight?
Yeah, very. I mean, it's the only way to say it. It's very disappointing, very upsetting.
What did you see from your group that led to the way things developed in the third period?
Well, we didn't play good enough to win, flat out. You know, we had a good first period, a couple goals off some face-off draws. Unfortunate that we didn't come into at the end of the first with a 3-0 lead, but still a 3-1 lead. I thought the second period they started to get some momentum. We took a couple penalties in the game that I didn't like. Talked about getting the power play advantage against this team and being disciplined. And, you know, they didn't score right away on the first couple, but you could see it got them going in the game. I thought Edmonton outplayed us in the second, and then in the, marginally. And in the third period, 5 minutes in, it's a tie game. We first shift, we have a couple missed assignments. I didn't like parts of that shift. And then we take a penalty and they score, and all of a sudden you're in a game and they get the lucky bounce for the winner.
We'll go now to Farhan Lalji.
Travis, we've come in after, the previous seven games and talked a lot about some of the good things that you guys have done. Is it hard to take any of those positives tonight, given the way it went?
Yeah, it is, to be honest. I didn't think we were as good tonight as we have been. Quite frankly, I don't think we had some individuals that didn't play good enough tonight. And
you mentioned it earlier, just it would have been nice to have gone into the intermission with a 3-0 lead. How difficult was that first goal?
It would have been nice. It's easy to say that, but that I don't think that affected our group at all.
Next up is Joey Kenward.
Travis, I think in four of your last five games, including these last two here, you've started out with at least a 2-0 lead. Can you I know each game is different, but can you put your finger on as to why teams are getting back into games against your club? Right.
I don't think we keep our pace up. I think we certain parts of our game we make some mistakes. Maybe we get a little. I don't like to use the word fancy, but we don't make the right decision at certain times of the game when you have a lead and you can give a team life just by turning a puck over. I think they want to do the right thing, but there's a couple. I'm not going to name names specifically, but there's a couple key plays that all of a sudden it changes the whole momentum of the game. And it doesn't take much for a team that has the firepower with their players on their team, but to turn the tide quick. And you could feel it. You could feel all of a sudden their team started feeling good about their game.
When McDavid tied it up at 3, and that's a deflating power play goal against, were you surprised that your team just didn't seem to have the urgency to respond? It really seemed like Edmonton still put the foot down
I thought Sutter's line gave us some good shifts after that. I thought Horvat's line had a couple in their zone. And after that, I thought the third period, we probably deserve what we got in the third period. They were a better team in the third period for sure.
Next up is Dick Nizar.
Travis, you've talked in seasons past, and you just kind of mentioned there just a second ago, but like when opponents raise their compete level and the importance for you to match that and raise your own, is that something that stands out to you so far this year? Is that a focus issue? Is that a commitment issue?
I think we've come out and played very strong in the first period with a lot of energy. And, when you get down in a game, you do raise your game. And we just haven't been able to raise ours to the level we need to be. And whether that's making the odd mistake, whether it's not being able to handle the pressure, the pace of the game sometimes goes up. And, it's a combination of it's not just one thing. I'm not saying our guys are competing hard. They're just not able to match the level, haven't been able to match it in some of these games. And I thought tonight was a good example. Not so much in the last not so much last game or any other. There was a couple games ago where we blew a lead. I just thought it just happened in those games. But I thought tonight we didn't raise our game high enough to match how they were playing. And you could see it. You could feel it. Our guys were talking about it, that they had to raise their game. And it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. And we didn't tonight.
I'm curious just your general philosophy too. We didn't see you use one tonight, but just on calling timeouts, when can they be effective? When is the right time to use them?
It's funny. Now with no fans, you almost don't need one because you're talking to your team the whole time. As soon as the puck goes in, there's not that lapse of 20 seconds or so for the rink to quiet down. I got them together quick after both goals, really. So I didn't feel like we needed it. There was still 15 minutes left in the game. And, I didn't think I needed it. And a lot of the things that you're going to say, some of your leaders are saying on the bench already. And that's part of it this season with the quiet building.
Thanks.
Okay, last hand raised here is Daniel Wagner.
Travis, early in the season, one of the phrases that kept coming up again and again was puck management. It seemed to be an issue especially in the second and third period, and a little bit at the end of the first, where just getting the puck out of the defensive zone seemed to be a priority, and it just wasn't happening. Are you seeing some of the same issues?
Like when we talk about puck management, I guess you can, it's different parts of the rink. Some of it's decision making with the puck. I thought we had a couple young forwards that made a couple plays that they would have liked back just with their decision making. And some of it is your ability to get a puck out under pressure and your skill level to do that. Getting places quick enough to give yourself enough time. Players talking. I think the ones you're talking about, Daniel, are ones that you just got to get the job done and get it out. They're not trying to make a fancy play in that area. That's not necessarily a decision that they're making. The ones through the neutral zone or in the offensive zone are more of puck management issues, where I think we've had that in the past where we've tried to be too cute in our game. There was probably two that I didn't like for sure that come to mind one in the first, one in the second. But I thought we didn't handle their pressure as well when they started pinching. Teams start to do that when they're down. We didn't handle the heat very well. And we lost some puck battles when they were pinching to make us spend more time in our zone. And bottom line is we weren't good enough to win. In some of the games that we haven't come out on top before, and I've said that we've played well and probably deserved a better fate, that might have been the case. But tonight, we just didn't flat out play well enough to win this hockey game and probably deserve what we got tonight.
Thank you.
That is Canucks head coach Travis Green after a 4-3 loss against the Edmonton Oilers, had a 3-goal lead, and that evaporated. Satyar Shah with Brendan Batchelor, and this is the Canucks Center post-game show presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics. I know, Batch, right before we went to break, you were talking about the coach stuff. I know you want to clarify your point about what you were talking about.
Yeah, because I'm seeing lots of texts coming into the inbox and lots of people, wanting the coach fired, wanting the GM fired. And I understand that. And all of those takes, you're completely in the right to have those opinions when the team has struggled this much. What I was getting at is it's not fair to anyone in this situation to leave people twisting in the wind. Right. So, make a decision on a coach like Travis Green. I personally think he's the right coach to continue guiding this group. I understand why others don't think that, but, in my opinion, he hasn't been given the quality of roster to get the job done. But, we were talking about it, Sat. He's a lame duck head coach here, and as the team continues to struggle, the priorities of the organization need to start shifting to building for the future and moving veteran players out and giving young players more opportunity and more ice time. And to your point, Travis Green needs to look out for Travis Green. He's in the last year of his deal. He doesn't have guaranteed work before the end, beyond the end of this season. So that's not what is best for Travis Green does not align with what is best for the organization if this season continues to go this way. So to me, you either have to extend him, and that would be the route that I would go. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a long-term extension or whatever, but you've got to commit to this coaching staff and say, these are the guys that we think should continue to carry us and to guide this young group through a tough season and try and see us out on the other end. Or you have to make the tough decision that would be in the best interests of everyone and say that change needs to be made, whether that's behind the bench or with the general manager or whatever it might be. If you're not going to trust Jim Benning to make the moves that need to be made for this franchise long term, then why is he still the general manager? So that's my opinion. And again, I'm not here calling for anyone's jobs, but it comes to a time where if you're going to make that decision, like many people think they are going to at the end of the year, you're going to do harm to the long-term future of this club if you don't do it sooner rather than later.
That's kind of spot they're in right now. We're going to get back to a lot of your reaction to our Dunbar Lumber text them box, 650-650. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, more of the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Adam Larson with a shot. Get a body in front, but it's in. And Tyler Ennis was able to find the loose change as it got away from Demko, and the Oilers have scored four unanswered to get into their first lead of the game.
Four unanswered goals, a 4-3 victory in regulation by the Edmonton Oilers over the Vancouver Canucks, who have now suffered back-to-back losses. Tough spot for this Canucks team. Actually, three in a row now for this Canucks squad, who was really trying to hang on and try to make this playoff conversation at least a thing, and could not do that the past three games, at the very least here at home ice against Winnipeg and now against Edmonton. Another game coming up on Thursday against the Oilers as well. This is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Satyar Shah, Brendan Batchelor, phone boards are open, 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650, and hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text them box, 650-650 here on Sportsnet 650. And lots of reaction coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. In this text, unsigned, suggestion for IMAC. Headline, it's not easy being green, but not everybody is defending Travis Green as well. And another saying, I want Travis Green gone. The reality here is, Batch, the Canucks have played so poorly this year and have come in so far under expectations, so below expectations, that everything's on the table at this point. And yes, we heard the owner talked about wants to wait until the after the season, and that's ultimately what they want to do. We'll see how that goes over the next little while here, but none of this looks good, right? I mean, we talked about, you know, the coaches have been getting the players ready the past 7-8 games. They've been playing harder, they're trying and all that sort of stuff, but the results aren't there. That doesn't look very good. And if you're looking long term, even if, let's just say for a moment, a change happens at the top of the organization, a new management team is leading this team, say heading into next season, when they evaluate this year, I don't know what the evaluation of the coaching staff is going to be as well. Like, you and I can sit here and say, hey, you know what? This looks good, and, you know, we know Travis from this. We like what Travis does here, and long-term, he's the guy for the club. But the longer this goes, and they can't really right the ship, they can't win, and things like this start happening, and if it compounds and gets worse and worse as time goes on, that's not going to be a good look on the coaching staff either, Batch.
No, and it gets back to what I was talking about, right? That at some point, what's best for the organization and what's best for the coaching staff are not going to be in alignment. And I don't know if we're at that point yet, but we're certainly trending in that direction. That was one of the most candid press conferences we've heard from Travis Green this year. Don't you agree that, you know, he was brutally honest about his team's performance tonight, and it's clear that he's frustrated too. And I know, you know, as I've said, any opinion at this point on what's ailing this team is valid, because everybody within the organization, on the hockey operations side anyway, has a part to share in this blame, whether it's coaching staff or management or whatever. But, you know, let's be honest, in the years that Travis Green has been the head coach, you know, if you look at the quality of rosters he's had, there's maybe one year last year where he was given, you know, enough to try and make the playoffs. And even then they were trending in the wrong direction in terms of that before the pandemic hit. And, you know, they get to play the play-in series and go on the great run in the bubble. And I'm not taking anything away from that by any means, but, you know, to me, it doesn't make sense to blame Travis Green, because I don't think he's been given a fair chance with a competitive roster.
See, competitive roster, last year, that team was a playoff team. They made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about the end of the season.
That's the one year for me, right?
They maxed out on it, right? But I will say this about this team so far this season. Yes, they may not be a good hockey team or a team that can go deep in the playoffs or anything like that, But they are better than what they've shown. Like, right now, the point I keep making is even the players, they got to be a lot better. They have to show more maturity and handle this situation. I know JT Miller is getting it in our text inbox. I know people talk about him. But when the entire team underachieves, even if they're not as good as people thought they were, when things are at this point and you're underachieving below even, say, the fairest of expectation and in the lowest of bars, that's what gets so problematic here, right? I mean, we're not just talking about the Canucks being a team that's, you know, not really clicking. They're well below 500. Like, by win percentage, they're one of the worst teams in the league this season. Like, it's not just about, hey, we're losing a few games. This is really bad. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Gary in Maple Ridge. Gary, thanks for calling in. What you got, man?
I'm going to say something. I'd like to have about 30 seconds to say this.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, it's not the bottom six. It comes down to one thing. When we lost Markstrom and five other players, that didn't do the team any good. Now, the ownership is worth $3.3 billion. They're not getting any money coming in. So no money, they decided no money is going to go out. Now, Aquilini decided that he wanted to come down and give everybody the vote of confidence. That's a bunch of garbage. I'm in sales. I know what it is. I know how to sell. And as far as I'm concerned, that was a bunch of garbage. Benning should be fired at the end of this season. Keep the coach if you want and get rid of the bottom six because, frankly, I saw Sutter. He's... There's so many mistakes. McEwen lost his check. It wasn't a lucky bounce. McEwen lost his check. I could go on and on, but the bottom line is the ownership has to get rid of the general manager and start fresh, and maybe we'll have a team like what happened with St. Louis, and I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Thanks, guys.
Gary, thanks for the phone call. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650. Let's go to Jerry in Delta. Jerry, thanks for calling in. What's
on
your
guys. Mind tonight? The first thing I wanted to say was my prayers go out to Tiger. As a sports fan, I just hope that everything can get okay for him. I mean, I'm really sorry to see something like that. From the hockey, it's sad to say it this way, but, you know, Smith maybe let in three goals, but you know what? He shut the door after that, and that's really, I'm sorry, but Demko needs to keep playing because I agree with you that I think I would play Demko as long as you can and give him the opportunity to try and get that job because, like I said, that's part of the game for them. And, and we know Markstrom's gone, and that's fine. So let's try and go with what we've got and move forward from there. But because we can't change Benning now. It's not going to make any difference in the team till the end of the year at all. Nothing's going to happen there. And the ownership... It was their choice to bring him in, and I'm sorry, I've never been happy with them. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the phone call, Jerry. And, you know, as far as an in-season change goes, that's a hard thing to do anyways, and that's something we have talked about, Batch, too.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, when you start looking at the options right now and you have the quarantine stuff going on and, hey, not many teams are willing to even let their AGMs or people in their organization go mid-season or even give you permission to talk to them, it's a complicated time to make anything happen. But if you're looking to, say, make some moves by the deadline or whatever, like, it does complicate things, right? Like, what's the vision? What are you trying to do? What's actually going to happen? How much leeway is there? So there will be a lot of questions here about authority, autonomy, as time keeps clicking here. And, you know, how much authority will there be here in terms of making deal? Because the last time we saw a GM be on the hot seat, it was Mike Gillis, and we all know what happened that trade deadline. And then ultimately, you know, he was no longer the GM of this team, but... You know, these are all the questions. So how much of a change does it make? I really don't know because it's an awkward year this year. But if you're trying to build towards a vision beyond this year and you want to use the deadline for it, then, yeah, I mean, you could have a problem in waiting to make a move.
Yeah, autonomy is the word that I was going to use. You know, if you're not going to make the change, and we understand all of the reasons why you wouldn't make changes this year, the economics, the pandemic, the issues with bringing someone new in with quarantine and everything – right, okay, that's fine. But you have to give your general manager autonomy if you're not going to do that because he needs to have the keys to the car to make some moves for this team at the deadline, especially if they continue to fall out of the picture. He has to have the authority to make some trades, to move out a Tanner Pearson for an asset, to try and find a home for a Brandon Sutter. You know, if there are any other players, Jake Virtanen, we've heard in trade rumors connected to Anaheim today. You know, so if you're not going to make that change, again, for the coaching staff, I think you have to commit one way or the other. And I'm going to, you know, stand atop that hill and dig my flag in on that point, that you cannot have this season be completed without making that call on your coaching staff one way or the other. With the general manager, it's different because moves aren't going to impact the roster right now. But if you're not going to make that change in season, then there has to be a directive to Jim Benning about how he can, you know, move some of these assets. It has to be a situation where he is given the leeway to make trades that could help set this team up in the future. Or, you know, if you're thinking about moving on from him at the end of the season anyway, then the other side of that argument is that you do it and you find the person that you want to come in and oversee the next phase of this team as it tries to transition into a contender.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see, at this point, I don't see Travis getting a contract extension in season. Now, once the season ends and, like Tony Roberts on Twitter says, at the end of the year, there will be a full-on forensics that happens to identify what's gone on. There's blame to go around, but it's not all bad. Hoglander, you love your bright spots. The future looks fine. That's from Tony. But as far as the forensics go, like, I do think I'm not expecting anything there, right? Like, I'm not expecting Travis to get a contract extension in season. Like, I think this is something that would come after the season when they make a decision, number one, on where to go with management. And then at that point, they'll start to make a decision on Travis. So I'm at this point, I'm not really anticipating anything coming down for Travis.
Well, and that, so then the question I have for you, Sat, in that regard to what we've been talking about already is how much long-term damage could that do to this organization, regardless of whether you decide to bring Travis back or not at the end of the year. If we assume that Travis Green is the head coach for the rest of this season without a contract, then Travis Green has to coach to win every game that he can. And I'm not saying that coaches shouldn't coach that way, because certainly that's what you want from your players and your team. But early on in Travis Green's tenure, we saw that, you know, the goals were split, where yes, he wanted to win games, but also he was fully aware that he had time in his contract, that the team wasn't expected to do a lot when he came in, and so he had to balance trying to win games with trying to develop players. Well, that balance won't be there for him now, because if he doesn't have a job at the end of the year, he's got to try and win as many games as possible to try and save his job, right? If Travis Green can turn this season around with this team and get them into the playoffs, then, you know, he probably has a job here. And if he doesn't, he would certainly have a job elsewhere. And I'm not saying that he's going to do that, but that's the mentality he has to approach games with. So, you know, I'll come back to what I was asking you, Sat. How much long-term damage could it do to this franchise if they don't make a commitment to this coaching staff or move on from them?
It's a hard question to answer in terms of how much damage can be done, but it's a missed opportunity. Like, I don't know if you're gonna create irrevocable damage to, you know, a certain situation for the final 20, you know, 33 games or whatever, or to, you know, we'll see what happens a few games from now. I don't think there's going to be this incredible damage to the players, but I do think there is a missed opportunity about trying to see what you have in certain players. Like MJ on Twitter said, you know, now you got to start figuring out what to do with a guy like Harlech. What is he for you? Yeah, you got to check out guys like Rathbone, Michaelis, and you got to see these guys and see what's going on and see what's happening here. Like, that's kind of where you're missing the opportunity, is to try to build the other guys on the periphery of the roster into perhaps being part of the core moving forward. And when you don't use that opportunity to develop players because you're trying to win games in the moment, it's a missed opportunity. So to me, I'm not so much sure that the top guys, the best young players on this team, are going to be forever scarred and damaged that they can't overcome. But considering where this team is at in its cycle, in a season where it looks like there's no hope of making the playoffs and you only have a set amount of games left, it would be best for the long-term future of this organization to use that time wisely to build towards the future. And you're right, it gets complicated when the coach is in the final year of his contract. Let's go back to the phone boards. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Wayne and Courtney, who's on the line. Wayne, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. Great post-game show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging on to the line. Yeah.
Totally agree with all your comments you guys have been saying, and more so with Hershey's comments. You know, I'm watching the game tonight, and, you know, first period, Mike Smith didn't look good at all. The Canucks won nothing right away, 66 seconds in, Bo Horvat, you know, and great goal, by the way. And they're up 2-0, then they're up 3-0. And you want to cheer and get excited and you know, get right into the game. But as soon as they made it 3-1, like Hershey said, I just knew, I have this thought in my mind, okay, here we go, the same scenario again. You watch, Edmonton's going to tie it, and they're going to win the game. And sure enough, that's what happens. And, you know, like in sales, if you can't close the sale, if you can't close the deal, you're not going to be successful. When you got a team down, you're up 3-0, you think the confidence would rise up. You know, when you got a team by the jugular, you know, and you're got them on the throat, put them away. Don't give them life. Don't just take your hands off their throat and let them breathe. Put them away. And it's time and time again is the consistency. It's 3 20-minute periods. You can't play 40 minutes and expect to win the game. You got to play a full 60 minutes. And even if they get in the playoffs, there's teams that are a whole lot better. Toronto, Montreal, Vegas, Washington, Pittsburgh, all these teams that are really, really good, you know, Vancouver, they're going to be out in the first round because they're not going to have the mentality, the confidence, and the players to put away, you know, teams, you know, that we know are much better than them. So, you know, it's an ongoing pattern, you know, consistency. And so I totally agree with everything you're saying.
Hey, Wayne, thanks for the phone call. That's Wayne and Courtney calling in. And, man, like, looking at the team and where they're struggling, it's pretty evident, like, what's wrong with this team right now. It's just a very inefficient roster, right? And that's the biggest thing. What they needed this season was the things to really fall in place for their top guys to be their top guys and really lead the way. There was no margin for error this season. And if one or two of their top guys struggle, it wasn't going to happen for them this year, right, Batch? And that's kind of the thing here. If you want to be pointing fingers at why is this team struggling, you want to blame the coach. I mean, at this point, you guys can blame whoever you want. Like, you can text in, call in. You have complete autonomy on this show to say whatever is on your mind, as long as you don't drop any cuss words and we got to cut you off at that point. But as long as you keep it respectful, you can say whatever you want. But it's pretty clear that the inefficiency of this roster is the reason why they are where they are this season. Now, to the point others have made, and I know Tony makes this point repeatedly on Twitter as well, the future does look bright. I mean, look at Ylevi showing a little bit this year. Hoglander's a big addition, right? And
he's been their most consistent player this year, Nils Hoglander.
There's a lot there. And once you get through next season and more money comes off the books, there's a lot you can do to build this team out long-term and have a lot of success with it. But you got to make sure you get those bets right. So there is the talk about in the moment right now, hugely disappointing, inefficient roster, a lot of mistakes, a lot of bets that haven't worked out. But in a year and a half, 2 years, you're going to be in a really, really good spot with your cap and with a young team that has potential. But you got to get this offseason right. You got to make sure you don't make the wrong moves during a deadline as well. And I know others have said, hey, you know, what's this garage sale you're talking about? It's essentially two guys at the deadline. It's Tanner Pearson and Brandon Sutter. That's it. Like, those are the only two guys you're really
maybe Jake Virtanen if you can find a way to get out from underneath that contract, but you're not expecting an asset back in that sort of trade.
No, that's the thing. It's, you know, if you're looking to actually get an asset, it's two guys you're UFA and two guys who are most likely not to be back anyways in Pearson and in Brandon Sutter. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650. Let's go to Stuart in North Van. Stuart, thanks for calling in, man. What you got?
Oh, gentlemen, I have to take a cold shower after every Canucks game and just, you know, the water hides my tears and disappointment from when myself acknowledging the pain of watching this team. And I mean, just to sort of reiterate on what a lot of your other brilliant callers have chimed in with, and one of the other guys was saying that, you know, it was kind of like the analogy of, you know, we got like four or five good guys and then a bunch of other, you know, people just kind of standing around. And I kind of agree with that, to the sense that, you know, outside of the obvious four or five guys, it's like having, you know, a Pontiac car dealership, but you have four random Ferraris on the lot too. But overall, it's still not a great dealership. You know, there's just, there's a couple things that stand out, but then there's just a lot of things, whether it's questions or, you know,
spare parts.
Exactly. Yeah, spare parts. Trust me, I have a Chrysler. I've had a few recalls. It feels like this team's just in a constant recall.
Right.
And it's just, you know, looking back to last year, and people say, oh, well, you know, the expectations were set so high after getting to almost the third round. Even if we had lost against the Blues or even the Wild in that play-in series, just the way the Canucks are playing as professional athletes, there is just something fundamentally wrong. So regardless of the success, or even if there was lack of success past postseason, there's something happening here. And I know you guys touched, and I totally agree on the whole point that if you're Travis Green or if you're on the coaching staff, you're thinking, well, okay, with this shortened season, like assuming the worst, we miss the playoffs and it's just a nightmare. What is this team looking like next year with the coaching? And you have to figure, you know, if they're not kind of given that sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, go ahead, then it just, that's just another question that's on the table. And I don't know. Like, again, we've seen this story, and I know, like, Sat, we talked about this a few games ago about how myself, and I know I can speak for many Canuck fans, are just so numb to this. And I don't care if you've been a fan since, you know, 5 years ago, or you got on board in the Luongo years, or the Sedin heyday, or the West Coast Express. We've just seen, like, just levels of whether it's ineptitude from the upper management or just player personnel-wise. Like, yeah, I don't care if you're playing against the Oilers of the 80s or the Atlanta Thrashers. You're up 3-0, boys. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's just – and, I mean, it's funny.
It's just beyond embarrassment at this point, right, Stuart? I mean, it's – it's one thing to lose every once in a while, but, you know, the losses they've had, the type of losses they've had this year is so devastating.
Oh, no, exactly, Sat. You took the words out of my mouth, because you think about, I think about this season, and we're, what, 20, 25 games in, pretty much. And I'm thinking, the only losses I can remember are when we've blown big leads or when we've had the doors blown off 7-1. You know, there hasn't been a 4-3 shootout loss. There hasn't been, you know, a 2-1 tight goaltending battle that went to the third period. It's either been like a complete blowout or we blow it. And it's just, I don't know. And it's funny, you look at those tweets from Aquilini a while back talking about the team. And I mean, but I don't know what's age worse, that or Steven Seagal's hairline, guys. I'm going to hang over with you.
I'm bringing the heat. Bringing
strong
the
call. Strong call.
Strong, right? I mean, making the statement at the time, you had to make a decision at that time. It's either, hey, make the move or double down on these guys and quiet the talk. It hasn't aged well, though.
But, well, and we've said it from that point, is if you're going to double down, then why not double down with a contract, right? Like, that to me is the tough part about it, is that you're doubling down and saying you trust Travis Green while you also haven't extended him beyond this year, so that puts him in a tough spot. Quickly, on the text line here, Sat, Kenny from Richmond writes it in response to what I was saying about Jim Benning and autonomy, and says, please explain how giving autonomy to Benning helps the situation. If he knows he isn't staying, he will do whatever he needs to win as many games as possible. Why would he trade away assets to weaken the team and help the next GM? So what I'm talking about is still having a directive from ownership, right? So, you know, you're not saying, okay, Jim, do whatever you want to do. You're saying, okay, Jim, we're going to allow you to make the moves you need to make, which I believe he would be allowed to do anyway, as long as he's still the general manager. You're not going to keep him as the general manager and you know, handcuff him. But there has to be a directive towards moving out those pending unrestricted free agents we're talking about in Pearson and Sutter if it gets to that point closer to the deadline, because, you know, we've seen what missed opportunities at the deadline have meant for this franchise in the past and how negatively it has affected their ability to rebuild or retool or whatever terminology you want to use. So that's the thing for me is, you know, because of the pandemic and the economics, if you're not going to make a change with the general manager, you still have to be in a situation where the organization can move out those players and get assets for them, or at least try to.
It is imperative that they do everything they can when they're selling at the deadline to get whatever they can back in return, right? Like, it's just something that you have to make sure you're doing. The difference, the last time this happened, and the autonomy was kind of taken away from the GM. That was Mike Gillis. It was around Ryan Kesler, who still had time on his contract, right? And that complicated things. They weren't sure about the return, so they waited and then make the deal. As far as rentals go, could that be different? We'll continue the discussion right here on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. More of your phone calls and your text messages on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're all competitors and, you know, we all want to win. And we know that the second you start second-guessing yourself and doubting yourself, it's just going to make things worse. And, you know, our job is to continue competing and working hard and trying to solve the situation we're in. We're going to keep doing that.
Thatcher Demko, after a disappointing 4-3 loss for the Canucks, blowing a 3-goal lead against the Edmonton Oilers. This is the Canucks Center Postgame Show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Brendan Batchelor. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650. Let's go to Nigel in Maple Ridge, who's been waiting a long time to get on. Nigel, thanks for being patient. What you got for us tonight, buddy?
Owen. No worries, guys. Hey, I just wanted to wish you guys congratulations.
On?
You guys are now in the top 10 world's toughest jobs. Having to listen to us at Canucks fans and commenting on the Canucks.
I don't know, man. Postgame shows like this are easy. We just open the phone boards and let you guys rant. You do the talking for us.
There you go, yeah. I'll tell you, Travis Green, his voice sure sounded defeated, especially when he came on the air tonight. It just seems as though that playoff run that we were on last year is like miles away. It just seems like a mirage. And I think that's what's happened is, you know, because of what happened in the playoffs, everybody had this unrealistic expectation that the Canucks were going to do better, but nobody expected them to do this bad. I mean, come on, you know, like it just seems as though no lead is safe with the Canucks anymore. But it just seems as though the Canucks, they just need a shakeup of something, you know, like I would be more excited for the Ottawa Senators right now, who again beat Montreal tonight. Yes, those Ottawa jerseys are on the way. They'll be here by March the 8th when the Canucks play the Canadiens again. But yeah, it just seems that the Canucks, they just need a shakeup. I know they've talked in the past about the possibility of picking up Sam Bennett from the Flames, who's been playing quite well recently. I think they were talking about Jake Virtanen, who again was invisible tonight. I mean, was he even on the roster tonight?
There's a few of those passengers there. No, I hear you, Nigel. There are a few passengers. But, you know, I mean, shakeup-wise, is a trade going to move the needle to that point? But it does kind of – it's one of those situations, right? Like, hey, maybe something needs to be done, whether it's a small trade, whether it is a move here and there. Like, sure, but at this point, are you salvaging anything? Those moves get made, and the time to make the move was a couple weeks ago, and then Francesco came out and had the vote of confidence, and that was a move. It was a decision. It was something to try to knock everybody around a little bit, or at least, say, take away the heaviness and the weight kind of hanging over the organization, and that was the shake-up move, and it was a doubling down on the direction. At this point, any type of move outside of a huge managerial change and you bring all new guys in and they have 2 or 3 weeks to figure out a new plan, I just don't see that being the avenue, really. And perhaps it happens. I'm just not sure that happens in the immediate future here. But what are you trying to accomplish with a shakeup at this point? Right? Like, that ship is
sailed. Just trying to get this team going. Like, you're trying to you know, shake the team out of its doldrums, trying to gain
to
the attention
end?
Of some of your key players. If you move someone, then it shows that everyone is movable if you don't start performing. So I don't know. Like, that to me is the rationale, is you try and scare guys into, into elevating their game. But A, I don't know if that works in today's pro sports environment. And B, I don't know if there is a player that you could move or a trade that you could find that would do that effectively right now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, right? I mean, it would be a move, and I'm open to just about anything. I don't know if anything is changing the course of this season in a big way at this point. Let's go back to the phone boards. Ian of Vancouver is on the line. Ian, what you got for us tonight?
Gentlemen, well, first of all, I love to see our coach get a five-year contract. I believe in him. And second of all, maybe you can help me or say, I notice, like, I only listen to the radio, the hockey on the radio, because I've done so in my life. But Bo Harbor, our captain, he seems to be the only player that, giving it all the time, skating. It seems like we got too many people not committed to our game. And have I got something there? Or...
Yeah, hey, thanks for the phone call. And, Ian, as far as the effort level goes, too many times guys slump their shoulders. And listen, I think Bo had a decent game. He scored a goal or whatever. But one thing that Bo has done at times, and this is what I pick at when it comes to Bo, he cheats a bit too much. He's too often looking to go on the offense and get out of his spot and do something as opposed to, say, being as disciplined. I don't have an issue with Bo's effort. It's always there. It's a lack of discipline at times in his positioning and what he's trying to accomplish that, you know, I harp on a little bit with him. I think the effort over these past eight games for large parts has been there. But as soon as things start going against them, Batch, they crater. And that's kind of what Travis was getting at tonight, too. It's like, it's about shooting yourselves in the foot. It's about making some mistakes. It's about forcing something and giving over momentum to the other team. And as soon as things conspire against them, Batch, they just start falling apart.
Yeah, they're very fragile, right? And you know, one goal goes against you and the shoulders slump. And, you know, this is why they haven't been able to overcome giving up the first goal at all this season, right? Because they get behind and, you know, they lack that self-belief for whatever reason. At least that's what it looks like watching from far away up in the press box or on TV at home. So, you know, and this is something we've seen from Canuck teams in the past. They got away from it last year. But they're right back to that point right now where it doesn't feel like as soon as they get down in a game, it feels like it's over. And that's what it felt like in the third period tonight, right? Yeah. As soon as the Oilers get the lead, you're like, okay, well, this game's over. Canucks aren't going to tie it, even though they have found a way to tie games recently. But the body language and the body of work to this point makes you believe that it's not going to be the case. Let's take a look at the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Lots of reaction coming in. Here is one from Derek in PG. He says, why has Edler not been mentioned as a UFA piece to sell? This is a bottom end team trending younger. He's on the back nine of his career. This shouldn't be a hard conversation to convince him to waive his no movement clause. Well, the fact is Alex Edler has never shown any inclination to waive his no movement clause sat. It didn't happen last time. More likely than not, it's not going to happen this time. And that's why we don't even bring him up as a name that you could move, because Edler has been steadfast in his commitment to playing in Vancouver and remaining a Canuck, and part of that commitment might be that you get him at quite a significant discount after his contract is up at the end of this season.
I think that plays a part into it, like, hey, the contract stuff, and like I mentioned before, the only team I could see Edler, and this is not a report, this is just opinion, he would consider it would be maybe Calgary, but even so, I'm not sure that's the case, and you're right. During contract negotiations, I do believe it was floated that, hey, once the contract ends, you know, there's an opportunity, plus 35, to sign him back at a cheaper number with a bonus-laden contract that's cheaper on the cap, and that works out a lot better. I think that's more likely than him getting traded at the deadline. But, hey, we'll see what happens here in the next couple weeks. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650. We have John and Kamloops on the line. John, thanks for calling in. What you got tonight?
Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit. Your last caller touched on it there, Nigel, about unreal expectations. Last year in the playoffs, I kept hearing everybody saying, oh, the Canucks, this young squad, they're learning so much. They're learning how to win and all this stuff. And I would suggest that last year playoffs were nowhere near what a normal playoff atmosphere usually is. There was no travel, no fans. The year before, the St. Louis Blues, I heard another guy mention earlier, a little girl with cancer and a song galvanized that city to a Stanley Cup championship. There was emotion. There was everything that there normally is in the playoffs. Last year, there was nothing close. Nothing close. They got outplayed by Vegas. They scored goals against the flow of the play. They got great goaltending, which happens. They're not the first lower seed team to go deep into the playoffs. but it doesn't mean they were a good team last year. Jacob Markstrom, they gave up 35 shots or more in 40% of his games last year. He should have been in the Vezina running for sure. And shame on Jim Benning and Aquilini for letting him go, because there's only a top few goalies in the league like that. And the fact that they let him go is just outrageous. And the last point I'd like to make is Quinn Hughes, I keep hearing everybody talk about him for the Norris Trophy. And I'm telling you, this kid has a lot of people fooled.
Hey, John, thanks for the phone call. He's not sold on Quinn winning the Norris. Maybe not this year, but we'll talk more about the Canucks, more of the postgame show, more of your phone calls here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's just frustrating. But like Mizey said, it just shows we have to mature as a group, learn from it, and move on, and do things better the next game. Obviously, you know, this has happened a couple of times, and we got to put our foot down right now and make it stop and finish it hot.
Welcome back to the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Brendan Batchelor. We're going to have Ian McIntyre join us in a few minutes, but let's go back to the phone boards. They are full tonight. People are fired up. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Brad and Whistler, who's on the line. Brad, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Sat, I just want to say I'm very fired up, and it's great to be on with you guys.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've actually been wanting to call in for a long time, and I've just finally had enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote down a couple comments, and for me, like, the key things are we need to build towards the eventual Stanley Cup run that we hope this young core can get to. Mm-hmm. And for me, once the playoff bar becomes truly unreachable, they need to switch. You know what you guys are talking about, the trade deadline. Actually, we should be thinking like several weeks in advance. Like, if they could pull off a Tyler Mott type trade, like when we traded Thomas Vanek, something mm-hmm. like that to build towards the run when our core guys are going to be like at their most elite levels, like 23, 24, 25 years old for Petey and Hughes, of course. So, And I got a hot take just to close it off.
All right, attaboy.
All right, so this is my hot take. So, like, there was all, like, the Mike Gillis kind of rumors. And I actually really liked Mike Gillis. Like, I thought he did a lot of innovative things. Like, we all know that, you know, like, you know, yes, he was a little bit smug, you know, at times. But he really did a lot of, like, things that pushed the team forward. But his draft record was horrendous. Like, mm-hmm. like, I don't think he drafted anyone outside of Hodgson and basically trading Schneider for Horvat. So we can't just bring in a guy that's innovative. But with Benning, I think the draft record has been the best in the Canucks' 50-year history. Like, we are stocked, you know, like even like the McDonoughs and those guys that are coming up. So I really think they need to, and this is a hot take, that they need to go to Benning and say, we're going to need to bridge you with someone who can maximize some of those efficiencies, like, you know, doing things with the cap
building out, you know, having a president, maybe having a more robust front office, right? That's what you're getting at, Brad.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I'm not sure that Weisbrod has the best track record personally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
no, it's
like,
fair.
Wasn't he on the, so I think that's all I got, but thank you so much for having me, and I'm going to keep calling in because this is the best. This is Canucks therapy.
Thanks for calling.
Attaboy. Thanks for calling in, Brad. And, hey, man, like, is that a possibility? There were rumblings in the past that, hey, maybe they bring in a president and they add somebody else to the front office. That has gone nowhere, right? And, you know, I get it. And this is what we get back to all the time. It's not like management hasn't done anything good or that there are a bunch of incompetent people running the organization. a lot of good has happened. A lot of good picks have been made. It's unfortunate, and I've gone through, you know, this many times. Lyndon was a president, and he wasn't perfect, and he very much learned on the job early, but there was a process that was being put in place towards the end of his tenure, and you saw how good the drafting was, Judd running it. They had a really robust drafting scouting department, and that stuff's been kind of stripped away over the past few years. Lyndon's gone, Brackett's gone, not a lot of people have come in to replace those people, right? And you're putting more and more on the shoulders of management, and now they're doing more, and you have less voices there, and you don't have a buffer to ownership. I mean, these things compound, and I think successful organizations long-term have multiple layers to their management team, and the Canucks haven't had that in a couple of years. Let's go back to the phone boards. 604-280-0650. Tambir in Surrey's on the line. Tambir, thanks for calling in, man. What you got tonight?
A better effort than the Canucks in the third period, that's for sure.
All right.
Man, that was brutal. That second goal. I love Quinn Hughes. I think I've defended Travis Green a lot during his time here. Mm-hmm. Why isn't the team prepared to come out and close the game out? It's happened two straight times now. It happened to happened in the Calgary game in the past as well. You know, it feels like this team either gets blown out or finds a way to lose games. And, yeah. And I hear the Green report, and it frustrates me. And I know Green's just defending his players and stuff, but he's saying that they didn't find a way to lose games. And I don't know what the plan is going forward, but, like, you have to start thinking forward, and it looks like they're probably not going to make the playoffs. You have to start looking to sell these assets and get something for it. And Jim Benning, it probably isn't even going to be the GM next year. So what is ownership even thinking at this time? Like, they gave a vote of confidence to the GM and the coach, and it feels like, you know, it looks like we're going to go another season without selling any assets and getting anything back for these players. And we're just going to be stuck in this, you know, in mediocrity. And yeah, we have some, you know, players that are great, and they're going to, you know, maybe hopefully, you know, be a core that one day could contend for the cup. But when you have a team like Edmonton that has Drysdale and McDavid in your division for a long time, and the LA Kings, who could be in the stakes, could be in the running to get Jack Eichel on their team, like, that's something that, you know, that could really ruin a chance at this young core's to even become a contender, maybe win a cup. And it could be a waste of Pettersson, and, like, Marcus Naslund went to waste. Or I'm not saying Sedin's career went to waste, because they got to the cup final and they almost won. But, you know, the fan base is crying for a winner. They just want one cup. They just want to win. And it feels like ownership is not willing to move off from Benning and find a replacement for him to get some assets in return. Look what Montreal did. I know Montreal's struggling right now, but they got a lot of draft picks. They turned those draft picks into some solid players on their roster, and it feels like the Canucks are not going to do that going in to the trade deadline. And
Well, here's the thing, Tambir. Thanks for the phone call.
Early to say that, right? Like, there's still, what, 2 months till the trade deadline, basically? Or
about
a month and a half?
A month and a half here. But, you know, once the deadline does come around, you know, like, I don't think they're going to be not selling anybody, right? Like, I do think they're going to be trying to sell guys who are UFAs at the end of the season. I don't think it's going to be like, we're going to hold on to our guys or whatever. The question
we've
is...
We've already been hearing rumblings about some of their players connected to other teams, right? We've been hearing rumblings about Jake Virtanen, and there are rumors out there about Tanner Pearson. So it's not like, you know, these conversations may not even be happening already, but I can understand the frustration of Tanbeer and plenty of other callers we've had tonight and people on the text inbox that are afraid that this deadline will pass like others have in the past, without the necessary moves being made to set this team up as well as you possibly can going beyond this season.
All right. We have time to get one call in, and then we got to go to Ian McIntyre, who's already graced us with his beautiful presence here at the Jim Robson broadcast gondola. So let's go to Roger in Vancouver. Roger, what you got for us tonight after a 4-3 loss against the Winnipeg against the Edmonton Oilers?
It was kind of disappointing, but, you know, they haven't... They seem to cough up a pocket quite often, and And I believe that maybe if we our team went back to the trap, then they would learn to play more defensive game because
right.
they.
So you want to see the style of play change?
Yeah, because they're saying that we don't have the fast players that other teams have. So if we play the trap, it might get the speedy players off their game. You know?
Hey, I got you. Thanks for the phone call. That's Roger calling in. And, you know, I'm not sure the trap helps you at this point.
No.
I'm not sure that's the issue. It's just, you know, you had a 3-0 lead and you coughed it up, you know, tonight. And I honestly didn't even see the team, you know, have these systematic breakdowns tonight. It's just, again,
they weren't good enough.
Mistakes.
They weren't good enough.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I mean, kind of at a loss of words where this Canucks team's at. Let's welcome in Ian McIntyre into the conversation. The closer, you can read his great work on sportsnet.ca. You see him on TV, you hear him on radio. The man does it all, and he's here now on the postgame show.
This really is the best part of the night right now.
Highlight.
Not me, the music. Thank you, Josh. Oh, I wish there were.
Ha, ha, ha. Not sure how much of a way out of this there is. And Ian, I mean, there's a lot of frustration and anger from the fan base, and I get it. And it's been so many tough losses this season, right? I mean, you had the embarrassing losses, 9 out of the first 16. They lost by 5 or more goals, and it's a stat we've beat to death, but it bears repeating to put it in context. We haven't seen a team lose that many games that badly through 16 games since essentially year 2 of the expansion sentence in the mid-90s. And now, in back-to-back games, they cough up a 2-goal lead against Winnipeg. They cough up a 3-goal lead against Edmonton. They get nothing out of it tonight. If you're a fan and you're invested emotionally, you have every right to be dismayed and upset about what you've seen from this team this season.
Well, if you're invested emotionally, then you need a hug. And we can't even do that. We can't even offer a hug.
Virtual hugs. Time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel completely exhausted mentally just watching them. Just watching them because you know you have that feeling. There's a fatalism about them now. You have that feeling. And I was talking to Dan Murphy about it. You know, when the goal went in at the end of the first period, I thought, well, here it is. Like, different game.
Yeah.
And the surprise to me was that it took until the third for Edmonton to finally put Vancouver away. But, you know, I don't know if you know this, often I try to be the voice of reason. I try not to be reactionary. And I very rarely am ever hostile because I don't think that anger does much good. It makes maybe you feel better to vent. And in the end, these guys are just playing a game. Mm-hmm. It's a make-believe world. They're making a lot of money to play it. But it's just a game. But I can't, you know, there's nothing I can say to dissuade people tonight. I understand how they're feeling. You know, the third period, people would have watched, had there been fans in the building, they'd have watched it through clenched fingers like a horror movie, afraid of what was going to come next because that's how this team is going right now. And, you know, I don't know what Travis is going to do. I presume they'll be practicing tomorrow. There comes a limit to how much, you know, we talk about the emotional investment from fans, but there's the emotional investment from players as well. And there's a limit to how much they can hurt themselves before they start to lose some of that investment and they realize how bleak their situation is and how terrible a position they've put themselves in. It's one thing if you play well for 2 or 3 or 4 games and you're not getting results. This is 8 games now. Mm-hmm. And in some respects, this feels worse than the first 3 weeks. So the first 3 weeks, the team was so bad, they weren't performing. You had no idea, you know, is it a terrible team? you know, what are they? They were so bad you couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. And we knew that they could play so much better. Well, now they've played a lot better on the whole. And I know that Travis is, you could just play his post game over and over again tonight. But I know Travis was saying that they weren't as good tonight, but they still had the 3-0 lead. Mm-hmm. And if you look at these eight games in isolation, they could have won any of the eight. They certainly should have won more than half of them. And yet they've got two wins. And it becomes a real mental obstacle for players, an emotional obstacle for players. So I don't know what they're going to do tomorrow, but they've got to try to obviously find a way to build themselves up, because this one really hurts everybody watching on TV and listening on radio, and it certainly hurts those players to lose the way they did tonight.
Yeah, and we're seeing it in the text inbox and on the phone lines, Ian. And, you know, Travis Green was pretty honest about his team tonight. One of the more honest post-game pressers we've heard from him, I think. Not to say that he's dishonest normally, but he was pretty blunt in his criticism of the team. And he didn't want to name names, but I see that you've been watching some of the goals back or analyzing them anyway on Twitter. And the frustrating thing here, and certainly we talk about the bottom six all the time and how this core group of players has not been well surrounded with a supporting cast that can help them win. But the frustrating part about it is that it's the team's top players that continue to contribute to these collapses.
Yeah, and I did go back after, Travis said what he did. Writing on deadline is kind of like the start of the Hunger Games. It's just chaos.
Yes.
Right? Like I do a quick stand-up for TV. I try to catch as much of the Zoom as I'm able to in terms of time, and then it's a mad scramble to write, 700 to 800 words in 45 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I miss a lot, is what I'm saying. I missed some stuff, or I can miss some stuff in the third period. I miss some things that are said. But Travis was so stark in what he said,
mm-hmm.
that I felt compelled, well, I better go back and look at these goals and see if there's anything I missed. And I mean, other than a lot of real slack defending and guys standing around watching the puck, I couldn't find the turnovers. If he's referring to turnovers directly on the goals, I couldn't find them, other than the one at the end of the first, near the end of the first period, where the Canucks appeared to be coming out of their zone quite nicely. They had some time and space through the neutral zone, and Brock Besser tried to go cross ice, mm-hmm. backhand pass in the general vicinity of JT Miller, and it was easily picked off, and Miller then exacerbated things by skating past the Calgary player.
Yeah.
Like he could have done a hard stop or a quick turn. And that allowed Calgary into the zone, and it was, 10 seconds after that that they scored. But I couldn't identify who these culprits might have been. But if the coach is saying that, you know that he's saying, because Travis Green does everything he can to defend his players, and even to the point where a couple of times a season when he has criticized them, like the Lotto line on the power play several games ago, where he said they weren't sharp tonight, and then 2 days later he's singing their praises about how well they've been playing. Mm-hmm. He very rarely says what he did tonight, and he's trying to get their attention, and this is one of the cards a coach can play, and it's usually played at times like this when you're in a crisis.
What I can think of when he mentioned that, because I thought the same thing, it made me perk up. The only thing I could identify, and it didn't lead to a goal, at least the goal didn't stand, was the penalty by Roussel, which was a bad one, when he went after Jesse Puljujärvi, gets a 2-minute minor. They killed the penalty up, which was good. And then he turns the puck over, trying to get it out mm-hmm. of his own zone. I know he's trying to pass it to Sutter, but it's a bad pass, gets turned over.
That led to the McDavid post, didn't it?
Right, and they thought it was a goal, and then they disallowed it. But what Travis said was, sometimes a turnover in a moment, it creates momentum for the other team. All it takes is something small. That's what I was kind of thinking of in that second period there, that giveaway. and it didn't lead to a goal directly in that situation. But if we were talking about momentum, and that's something Travis talked about, the momentum shift in a big way in that second, and the Canucks never got back into it in the third.
Yeah, but he also said, I saw the quote, and I didn't hear this part myself, because by now I was researching and writing, but he said, young guys, did he not? In his, I saw somebody tweeted a quote. We had a couple of young players, young forwards. Batch?
He mentioned those lines.
I believe so, yes.
Young forwards? Oh. Anyways, Roussel's not a young forward. Brandon Sutter, who's certainly not a young forward, I saw him a couple of times on the same shift in the third period give away the puck as his team was trying to get out of its zone. So, I mean, those kind of turnovers, it's almost like we've become accustomed to, you know, that extends shifts in their zone. I thought he was referring to things that lead directly to the goals, but as you say, Sat, you know, he's talking about turnovers that change momentum and change the feeling of a game, and certainly there were a lot of those. And I do remember the Roussel one, but there were several of those. I don't think the Edler play on the penalty that Edmonton did score on was good. He kind of fumbled. It was a bit of a tough puck as he was backing up through the neutral zone and Edmonton was trying to counter, but the puck went to Edler and he kind of fumbled it. It was difficult to handle and then he tripped the guy. I didn't think that was a good penalty. But it just, you know, as I say, there was a feeling of collapse, or a feeling of impending doom. That's a emotion we're well accustomed to.
Yes.
Over 50 years, but you can feel it at times like this. You feel it in games, that impending doom.
I kind of had this resignation that it's going to implode on them. When it went 3-3, I was just like, oh, they're probably going to lose this game. And
if you held out until it was 3-3 before you had that thought.
Right, but as soon as it went 3-3, I was like, they're going to lose this game. I'm sitting here by myself. I said it to myself because there was just this resignation you can see from the players on the ice, essentially, and you feel it. And I'm not trying to make this mystical thing about it. You can feel it when a team gives up, but sometimes it's just staring you in the face, Ian.
Yeah, I don't think they give up, but I think that this lack of confidence, the same feelings that we have, they have those on the ice. And it's not about, I don't think it's about effort. I think it's about execution and what they have experienced firsthand, what they've done to themselves, and that worry, that feeling that they're doing it again. And that's when, you know, it becomes, you know, a cycle that's really hard to break when you've got negative results, negative feelings, which lead to more negative results and more negative feelings. And that's why it's the longer this goes and the tougher it's going to be to snap out of it. And it's been a while now, 8 games.
We're getting a lot of reaction on the text line tonight, you know, predictably so, wanting people to be fired and let go. But one of the topics we've been discussing tonight, and I wonder when they reach this point, is with Travis Green in the last year of his deal, there will come a point this season, Ian, where the best interests of the coaching staff and the best interests of the organization are not aligned, where as a coach in the last year of your deal, you want to try and win as many games as possible. You want to set yourself up well for a new contract, or if the organization moves on from you, you know, a good landing spot somewhere else. But there will come a point when there will be calls, and rightfully so, for things to shift towards giving young guys a chance and getting young players into the lineup and trying to move veterans on. And that's what I worry a little bit about. And, you know, it's probably too early to be having this conversation, but we're seeing a lot of despondency on the text line and on the phone boards tonight. So it feels like an appropriate time to talk about, you know, how the organization has to grapple with a situation where your head coach is not under contract and this season has gone as pear-shaped as it has.
Well, this is all part of the danger of entering into a year like this when you don't have your coach under contract, is it leads to a potential conflict of interests and in what's best for one is maybe not best for the other. I think, and maybe, you know, this is more an aside than to address what you said, Brendan, but I think it's going to be tough to move people. We'll see what the trading deadline looks like. But if you're,
we're only talking about one or two players anyway. Yeah, like, it's not like you're going to make a paradigm shift in the way this organization looks at the deadline.
But if it's an American team and there's some sort of quarantine going the other way, which there is, I mean, the NHL has its own quarantine. Some states have some quarantine now. I mean, I'm not sure at the deadline that there's going to be this feeding frenzy for players because of how difficult it is to navigate the pandemic and pretend it's business as usual.
So does it need to happen sooner than that then?
Well, it probably does. I mean, if you're going to do that, then it probably does have to happen sooner so that you get the teams that might be interested in your players feel like they're getting full value. But I think the movement isn't going to be anywhere near what we've seen previously around the league. And in the Canucks case, you know, what they have to offer, although, you know, a couple of players would be appealing pickups as rentals, it's not going to fetch a whole lot in return.
Well, you know, Ian, that's the thing, and we had Elliot Friedman on today, and one of the things we talked about, and the point I made the other night on the program with myself and Andrew Walker, 4-7 on Sportsnet 650, was, yeah, sure, the Canucks have to figure out a sell date this season. At what point they say, okay, we got to look ahead and we got to move guys. But how many guys are we talking about here? We're talking about really Tanner Pearson. Sutter, hopefully you can find a home for him. Jordy Benn, I'm not sure. And based on what the market's like, to the point you just made, less buyers, a lot of sellers, teams don't want to add cash, no fans in the building, and what are you loading up for this year outside of a handful of teams that feel like they have a chance to win and they really want to go after it? Like, what are we talking about here? We're talking about one player, essentially, and that's Tanner Pearson. And I believe that if you're not going to sign him, and I don't think that's the right move anyways to sign him at this point, save your cap space and look ahead, that's the one guy, really. Like, this idea of the Canucks might trade three or four guys, I just don't see it. Even if you get ahead of it, at best, you're moving two players, and that's Pearson and Sutter. But you got to get ahead of it if you want to do it.
Yeah, as far as trade value, if there was any kind of decent asset available for Jake Virtanen, I think that trade would have happened before the season even began. You know, would have happened probably before
the contract was signed, even.
Certainly before the draft, because that was a pressure point. Adam Gaudette, I think there'd be some interest, but. To the extent that Benning's had trade talks, we don't know exactly we don't know anything about what he's asking for. But again, I just think there's limited value in what the Canucks have to offer right now. And you are going to need some players, right? It can't be that they're going to have to build, do a lot of building this off season. And they have these core pieces, and they'll have another good player, presumably, in Pod Colson. But you're going to have a lot of bodies. It's good that they're finally going to get at least a little relief from this cap pressure. It's bad because, you know, Brandon Sutter is still a regular bottom six forward. You need to replace him. And listen, we all know that they can replace him for someone a lot cheaper than $4+ million a year. But if you start trading, you know, giving away Jake Virtanen if you can find a taker, or trading Adam Gaudette for whatever that would be, I'm guessing not a player, an NHL player right now. What are you going to have next year? You know, who's actually going to be playing behind the good core pieces that you've assembled, especially when you're trying to improve that part of your team, not make it weaker. So I just think they're going to have a lot of work to do this off season, and you know, they might want to have a player like Adam Gaudette, who's 24 years old and still could get a lot better than what he's shown.
And that's why I keep coming back to those two UFA guys. Like, if you're making a move, it's probably guys who are UFA at the end of the year, Pearson and Sutter. And even Sutter, you know, one thing that Elliot mentioned was, it's not like he's the only bottom six forward on the market. There's going to be a bunch of these guys that teams are trying to move out. You know, maybe that there isn't even a fit there. So I'm all about getting ahead of things and trying to add assets the best you can and move out guys who won't be here long term and all that sort of stuff. I'm just not sure how much is actually going to get done this year.
Well, apart from the logistical problems that are very real in trying to make trades, with the amount of salary cap strain around the league, plus the ongoing financial crisis that's in a lot of these markets with no fans in the building, there's probably going to be more players available at lower prices than there have ever been.
Yeah.
And then if for the teams who are willing to buy, I agree with Elliot. There's if you want an experienced guy to play on your fourth line who can kill penalties and, you know, has
win a face off,
win a face off.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be choices. So again, I think I understand that there needs to be change. You can't just keep going like this, but I guess temper expectations that somehow there's a windfall there available if you can move pieces now that are going to help you next year. Chances are whatever you're moving now, you're going to get a long-term return. You're not going to get immediate return because teams that are looking for rentals are not looking to give up players off of their roster to you.
So essentially what I'm looking at here is you're looking at a second and a third, the best you're going to get in this case by trading Pearson and Sutter. And that's if you actually pull both those guys off. You're right. Those are good assets to have, and that's you add it to your portfolio. You have an offseason, you use it for something else, and it's always a good asset to have. But it's no immediate help coming this year. It's about looking ahead to next year and the future.
But, of course, maybe you package those
later,
and,
of course,
and make a deal. I think, you know, just hypothetically, if they were going to trade Tanner Pearson, I think a second would be pretty good return.
Mm-hmm.
They might not get a third for Brandon Sutter.
No, they get nothing for Brandon Sutter.
Might not get a fifth or a sixth for him either. Or maybe ends up being a Thomas Vanek trade.
Yeah, and hey, you know
for,
what?
For a guy the other team was throwing away, it turns out he could play, Tyler Mott.
Somebody called in today and said, you got to do another Tyler Mott trade. And you know what? That's kind of funny. It's true. They could use another Tyler Mott trade, a guy that come in and maybe a long-term fixture in the bottom six in a deal that nobody really expected much of when it happened at the time. He is Ian McIntyre. Read his latest on sportsnet.ca. Does great work on radio and on TV. He is the triple threat, but we call him the closer from now on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. And Batch, always a pleasure having you on the show, but you're going to be back to your play-by-play role coming up on Thursday alongside Corey Hirsch when the Canucks host the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, no disrespect, Zat. I've enjoyed being with you, but I'm excited to get off the postgame show and back to calling the game. I've missed it the last couple of weeks. It's been hard watching from home for more reasons than just the Canucks struggling here.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to being back at the rink and back in the booth on Thursday for what we will hope is an improved effort from the Canucks against the Oilers.
Well, honestly, Batch, I thought maybe you were the problem initially because the team did have sort of a spike.
I'm the solution, Ian. I'm the solution.
But yes, it's not you. Come back soon.
Will do.
Come back right away.
Thank you.
All right. And I'm Satyar Shah. I'll be back again on the air tomorrow alongside Andrew Walker and Bick Nazar on the program, 4 to 7 on Sportsnet 650. Special thanks to Josh Elliott Wolf, our producer back at the station, and our executive Canucks producer, Cam Barra. And thanks to all you listening. This has been a presentation of Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.